it's a day for myths, I suppose. I'm going to tell you about Icarus. Who remembers Icarus from their high school mythology requirements? Icarus flew too close to the sun, or maybe not close enough to the sun. It depends on who's telling the story. Icarus's father was Daedalus. Daedalus got them in trouble on the island of Crete. He befriended the wrong people. Crete is an island just off the coast of Greece. They had to get off the island fast, but what could they do? They had no boat. So Icarus, who was a swaggering, too cool teenager, and his dad, the haphazard inventor, fashioned wings out of wax and bird's feathers, huge, glorious wings out of plumes. Gorgeous things. And Icarus's dad, Daedalus, began to worry because Icarus really likes wearing these wings. He can't get enough of how cool he looks in these wings. So he says, "Son, don't get a big head. You aren't a bird and you aren't a god. Don't fly too close to the sun. Your wax will melt and your feathers will become unstuck and you will fall head over tail into the surf." Hubris is Daedalus' fear. Icarus already thinks he knows it all. He already thinks he doesn't need his worrying dad's advice. What if he doesn't listen and he melts away? Then Daedalus remembers how hard it is to drag Icarus out of bed in the morning, how reluctant he is to cut the grass, how many times he has to be nagged to do the dishes. Lazy, Daedalus worries. Lazy and complacent, that boy. So he adds, "And don't fly too close to the water. I know it's easier, but the sea spray will undo the wax as well, and the feathers will get heavy and damp, and into the sea you will go. You will be fish food if you are lazy. Don't fly just above the water, Icarus. I know I nag. I know I'm always on your back, but please, you are my only child. Stay in my flight path so you will be safe. Fly right behind me so I will not lose you." So off they go. Daedalus is in the lead, and Icarus is right behind him, right in his path. But you know what it is like to be curious. Who can follow their father when the sea teems with dolphins at play, with shining pods of whales streaking through water in smooth lines, with schools of darting fish in every fluorescent color? Who can stay away? And Icarus is young, and his body is so strong, and it makes him bold. Surely his father's claims, his father's worries are just more helicopter parenting. He swoops over the waves, hearing the dolphin's screechy laugh, trying to count all the different patterns on the fish's bodies. And he gets wet, and he gets cold, and he panics. And he remembers his father's warning, so he looks to the sun for salvation. Surely he can get dry enough if he gets up there to finish his flight. So he bats his wings hard as he can, and he flies toward that orange sphere, feeling its warm embrace, mesmerized by the binding colors, a million shades of yellow and orange and red. Dancing fire. And the poor boy, simply in love with our Earth's majesty, feels his feathers separate from his arms, feels bits of fluff floating away, and before he knows it, he is falling head over heels into that sea. The myth of Icarus is ancient, but the reason we tell these old stories is because they are bigger than mere fact. Sure, they didn't really happen, but they teach us about ourselves. All parents are in some way Daedalus, wishing the boy would just do as he did. Just conform to family tradition, follow the path carefully. We don't want our young people to suffer and to hurt like we did when we insisted on making our own way. But of course, Icarus has to create his own life. And of course, it's painful. You might be burned by the sun. You might fall away from all that is familiar and have to create a new life. Your old life will die, and you have to rise from the sea to create a new spirituality that is yours alone. imprinted with your own DNA. Leaving the faith of my childhood felt like flying off the island of Crete. Would I burn up from asking so many questions, from flying so close to the sun? Would I give up on spirituality entirely? Was it too hard emotionally? Would my soul fall apart if I coasted low on the edges of despair and feeling outcast? It isn't easy to leave your island home, but so many of us do. Nearly all Unitarian Universalists are what we call come-outers, which means we were raised in another faith tradition and we came out of that tradition and became Unitarian Universalists. We left Crete. We crested over the waters on our feathered wings. We were awed by the ocean and blinded by the sun, and our old self fell away. And we create a new life, a fresh and unique spirituality for ourselves that's different than that of our parents. We are not angels, we are not gods, we are heretics. The word heresy is derived from the Greek word heretikos, which means able to choose. Anyone who's had a new member class this year already knows this. That doesn't sound that bad, does it? Able to choose? In the 1800s, the Roman Empire said that everyone had to be a Christian in order to unite the empire, and a specific kind of Christian, the Trinity kind, the God is holy, Jesus is holy, and the Holy Spirit is holy kind of Christian. Thousands of people converted all over the empire in 1 year alone. People who lived on the outskirts, farmers, people who lived rurally, country folks, they were considered hereticos because they were too far out of civilization for the authorities to bother enforcing Christianity. It just wasn't worth the work to go out in the country and insist the people convert. So they could stay in their earth-based traditions, which most of them did. Some of them were even Jewish. Some worshipped Greek or Roman gods. Some were atheists. For a while back then, being a heretic was just synonymous with living rurally enough to make your own choice about religion. But some heretics lived in the city, some heretics who founded our very faith, the heretics that we hold near and dear. Arius was an early theologian for whom the terrible insult Unitarian was created. Arius was born in the 200s and lived in the 300s in Egypt. And he believed that Jesus was created by God and therefore wasn't a God and hadn't existed since the beginning of time. That's why he was slammed as a Unitarian, uni meaning one, meaning just God is holy, not a Trinitarian. It sounds like small theological potatoes nowadays. It seems like no big deal. But that, and back in the Roman Empire, those were fighting words. The official doctrine said Jesus and God were alive since the very beginning, and they were both deities. And it wasn't okay for Arius to disagree, but he did anyway, because he believed the Bible backed him up. But Caesar wasn't interested in the Bible. He was interested in having a united empire, and united meant everyone agreed on everything. Caesar wanted an orthodoxy, which means a one-path belief system. But Arian was causing a heterodoxy, many belief systems. Heterodoxy is what we have now. Under this roof, Unitarian Universalists are a heterodox religion, which means we have many paths. We believe in many things, but we're still one church. Arius was incredibly brave because he was a priest under Caesar, and his life was shattered by not agreeing to Trinitarian doctrine. All his writings were destroyed. Every trace of his life was wiped out. Arius could have just agreed. Early in his adulthood, he had conformed to Trinitarianism. He had believed it. But his faith continued to change. It continued to grow, and he refused to stop exploring. Like a good Unitarian, he insisted that he be allowed to choose his own beliefs. He was a heretic, but he ended up responsible for our name, Unitarian, that we have today. Once an insult, now something I'm proud of. So Arius is pretty great, but my favorite UU heretic is Francis de Vie, who lived in Transylvania in the 16th century. Transylvania in the 16th century was reeling from the Protestant Reformation. And the country was full of tension. Lutherans and Calvinists were fighting over bits of doctrine, and Catholics wanted both groups to just come back to Catholicism or get out of Transylvania. King John Sigismund was at a loss for what to do. He didn't want to force a state religion on people, but infighting was destroying his country. No one could get anything done. He decided to hold a debate. And this is pretty cool. This is how you handled conflict in Transylvania in this time period. You had a debate for 10 days, 12 hours a day, starting at 6 a.m., and you just argued for 10 days. And then after 10 days, the people in the argument took a vote, and everything was decided. Sort of a cross-country version of endurance challenge. So every day for 12 hours a day, clergy came, and they argued over biblical scripture. Now, Unitarians were a tiny minority in Transylvania, but the court preacher was Francis David, and he happened to be related to the king, so he got to be the court preacher even though he was a Unitarian. His arguments during the public debates were so good that the Unitarian Church went, in those 10 days, from being the smallest church in Transylvania to being the most populated, the biggest church, the biggest denomination. Hundreds of people converted. People couldn't believe how great Francis David was. The king himself converted to Unitarianism. The king wanted to make the whole kingdom be Unitarian because he thought it was so great. But Francis David, in true Unitarian form, said, no, we have to let people choose their own spirituality. We have to let people's faith grow. They have to be able to choose. This was big news. It was the first time that there had ever been an edict of religious toleration in the world, ever. All over Europe, people were burning for not being Catholic or not being Calvinist or not being the right kind of Calvinist. But Francis David was saying, no, let's just let people figure it out. Unfortunately, the king died a few months later and was followed by a Catholic king who said all religions functioning in Transylvania at the start of his reign were okay, but that no further religious innovation was allowed. This is really weird. So it was okay to be a Unitarian or whatever you were, but you couldn't change any of the theology from that day on. Nothing outside of the Unitarian box was allowed. So Transylvanians had this weird hybrid of religious heterodoxy and orthodoxy. They could choose any of the approved state religions, and the list was pretty long and diverse, but once they chose, they were set for life, and that religion couldn't change or expand at all. No new ideas. And religious leaders were forbidden to explore or evolve their own theology at all. So no matter how much you studied or learned or meditated or prayed, no new ideas could come from the pulpit. No changes could happen in your beliefs. It's such a weird idea. For a lifetime rebel rouser like Francis David, this was too much to ask. He had no interest in reiterating the same old beliefs. He wanted to debate. He wanted to explore his faith. Even though he was the head of the Unitarian faith, the biggest church in Transylvania, he was called to court on challenges of being innovative. That was the official charge.
Right.
Innovative. It's like what you want people to be. This was a big deal. It was like the Pope being called out on charges of heresy for changing his mind about purgatory. This was big news in Transylvania. But Francis David refused to stop studying and praying and exploring. And for that, he spent the rest of his life in a prison cell until he finally died, an unheated prison cell. He gave up his lofty and comfortable position for incarceration because he believed so deeply that faith should be allowed to evolve and change throughout your life. It makes me wonder if David ever felt like Icarus. Was he flying too close to the sun? Or was he just a good Unitarian, refusing to suspend his exploration of the spiritual realm? Was he just at the forefront of our come outer faith? Perhaps his parents wished he would simply follow their path, stay right behind them. But David, like me and like you, chose to put his faith in this heterodoxy, the faith of freethinkers and rebel rousers, the faith of people that believe that flying close to the sun is worth the risk. A common concern I hear among UU youth and kids is that this is a very hard faith to explain to outsiders.
Yep.
What do you tell the kids at school when they say, "What does your church believe?" Well, that's the thing. This church doesn't believe anything because institutions don't have beliefs. People have beliefs. This church doesn't tell people what they should believe. This doesn't mean that everyone in this church family doesn't have things they believe in deeply and passionately, but we're a part of a faith that believes we can believe different things and still be one family. That what we believe today doesn't have to be what we know is true in the years to come. Our faith should evolve. I'm hugely thrilled and proud when I hear from our kids and our youth that what they believe has changed. That what they believed a year ago is different than what they believe now. Because your faith should change and grow. I'm thrilled that you, as adults, will have your faith change and grow as you're part of this community. Francis, David, and Arius lost their positions, their families, their actual freedom, because they knew what Unitarian Universalists still espouse today, that we believe in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. It's one of our seven principles. We are not allowed to search, not only allowed to search, we are expected to. Let's be Icarus. Let's fly freely toward the sun. Let's cast our wings above the water and watch the whales play in the surf. Yes, all that we know from our religious upbringing might fall away. Our spirituality may die in the water and be reborn on the journey, and it will be so much harder than if we just followed the path. But we have the heritage of Arius and David, Unitarians who understood that freedom of thought and belief were all that was worth living for. Secure yourself to heaven. Hold on tight. The night has come. Fasten up your earthly burdens, because now we all are chosen ones.